Here we go. Hold your ears, folks. It's showtime.
The name's Adam Weber, and I see that you buy baseball cards.
How much you want for this Mickey Mantle rookie season?
I was hoping to sell all of the cards.
TalkZone presents the Fan Cave Radio Show with your host, Tom Morgan.
This guy's unbelievable.
Featuring Phil Rogers of the Chicago Tribune and Dave Hoekstra of the Chicago Sun-Times. Sponsored by HoosierBat.com.
Wait, I'll make you a deal. I will give you a Rogers Hornsby if you take me to the hotel.
The show that can change your life.
Rogers Hornsby?
Just let your wife find out you're listening to a sports and memorabilia show on the internet.
Rogers Hornsby's worth like $4,000.
So what? I got two of them, and this many Larry Yogi Berras.
Sit back, relax, and learn a thing or two. It's the Fan Cave Radio Show on TalkZone.com.
Let's go to work.
Welcome to the Fan Cave Radio Show. I'm Tom Morgan with Phil Rogers of the Chicago Tribune, Dave Hoekstra of the Sun-Times, and our producer Dave Olson. We're on every Wednesday morning live from 8 to 9 a.m. Central Time, and you can hear rebroadcast 24/7 of any of our shows anytime at TalkZone.com. And Dave Hoekstra, longtime Chicago Cubs fan, is ready to turn it into the White Sox. He's ready to be a Sox fan, right, Dave?
I was talking about, I almost missed the rumpled humanity of Patrick. I mean, this whole interview process with these guys, it's just like, I don't know. You know, I saw the thing with Dale Slim the other day. He says the exact same thing he went through in Boston. You know, I'm just really, really cynical. I just want them to break out of the Boston mold. I'm just holding my breath and, the corporate spin of all this, the suits and stuff, I know it's early in the game, but thinking the Sox might be more of a Chicago team for me, you know what I mean?
They definitely have the Chicago feel to them. Are you sure it's not that you're just kind of think you might miss being titled long-suffering Cubs fan?
Well, the story has just started, so, you know, I'll reserve judgment and stuff, but this whole thing about, and Phil could probably address this, about bringing these guys out to talk to the media after the interview process and stuff, it just seems kind of over the top to me, like they're interviewing for CIA directors and stuff, and I just wish they'd, you know, kind of cut out of the mold a little bit. And even I saw Epstein said last week, there was a quote, we don't have to do Boston everything here, but, you know, even the, I know the PR department guys, this is long before Epstein came, they're from Boston, and it's just, I was talking to a friend who owns a business in Chicago over the weekend. Would you run your business, or Tom, would you run your card store, you know, exactly like another card store right down the street? You know, I just, the Boston love is just as a fan.
I think of Boston. I think of that championship in 04 and the one in 07.
I don't think Epstein had anything to do with the one in 04. I think he had something to do with the one in 07. He inherited a really good team in 04. You know, they won 93 games when he came in.
He did, but he traded Sammy Sosa, Nomar Garcia-Parra, and they were a much better team after that trade. I mean, he remade that trade or that team. I mean, yeah, he inherited Manny Ramirez and a lot of good guys. David Ortiz was his guy totally. I mean, he and his guys found David Ortiz.
I might get excited when I start seeing move some of these guys out and see what he gets in return and stuff. But this whole process that they're going through now is just so Ivy League and so corporate, and so East Coast. It doesn't have a Chicago feel to it. It really doesn't. Does it have a Chicago feel? Maybe not. But I just wish they did
the
whole box.
Dave, you're reminding me of Jose Canseco when he was traded from Oakland to Texas, and he talked about how he liked it better in Texas because out in Oakland everything was always win-win-win. he liked the team that stunk and liked it that way.
I think Dave is actually speaking for what might be a bigger group of Cub fans than maybe we even realize, that they want to win, but they want to win with the old Wrigley, the old scoreboard, nothing modern. If it's almost, I really think maybe if you can't win that way, then you just don't win till you can win that way. Do you think maybe there's something to that, Dave?
Well, I don't mind. I've said before on the show, I don't mind signage, and I don't mind, you know, tearing the scoreboard down. I think that's a long-term thing. The place, unlike Boston, you know, it is landmarked and stuff, and I think that's way. It could happen, but I think it's way down the road and stuff. Signage and tweaking the ballpark and doing Yawkey Way, which I know they, of course, they wanted to do that at Wrigley and stuff. None of that stuff bothers me and stuff, but I just, you know, I don't feel comfortable with this right now as a Cubs fan. Chicago, the White Sox just seem more right now as a Chicago operation. Yeah.
There's definitely a corporate feel to the young guys.
My colleague Rick Tellender, I mean, I liked his column a couple weeks ago where, you know, these are like the Wall Street Occupy guys. I mean, they're just so, they're like, just as a fan, never met them, never gone to a press conference, but they're like three of the same guys. You know, three, like, you know, like I said, I miss the rumpled humanity of Henry already.
Yeah, but you might not miss Henry for long if, you know, let's say not this year, but the next year, they've got a team out on the field that is really exciting. I think that's really what I just think you're skeptical that they'll be able to do it,
I'm excited to see what type of player moves they're going to make. I haven't been impressed with this interview process. You know, I really haven't.
Well, the guys they're bringing in,
I'm not a Pete Mackinnon guy. I think Sandberg, I think they should have at least given Sandberg an interview. You know, maybe that would have, like, raised false expectations and stuff, but I think if they're picking everybody's brain, they could have at least talked to Sandberg and maybe picked the Cub. Learn about Cub culture. These guys don't know that much about Cubs.
I think Mike Maddox might have some potential. Yeah. He's supposed to be coming in today. Now,
Maddox is my favorite, you know.
Yeah. What do you think about that, Phil?
I'm with Dave in finding the interview process. I would call it hokey or over the top, both. And I'm cynical in that I suspect while they're running these guys around in front of us, you know, between 11 and 7 at night, they're going out and doing the real search, and that the manager that they hire won't be somebody they brought in there, you know. And part of that is none of the managers they're bringing in are proven guys. And I look at everything else that's being done there. It's on such a grand scale. I have a hard time believing, you know, they're going to do all this and turn over the manager's job to, for instance, Mike Maddox, who's never managed. You know, he's a great baseball guy. Everything these guys do is based on information. And where's the information that tells you what kind of a manager Mike Maddox would be? So I say it's, you know, I might take the field as a favorite to be the manager over anybody that actually goes through the interview process. I'm not really all in believing the manager is going to be one of these guys that's paraded up there in front of the media in a public interview.
I'll be really disappointed if it's Frank Kona. I mean, they talk about, and again, like in own business, they know they work together. I know they've got history together. But I think Frank Kona is burnt out. You know, I think, you know.
I can almost tell you, Dave, it's not going to be Francona. My take on that is Francona is a friend of Epstein's, and, you know, for the most part, they're partners who had a lot of success together. And, you know, I think they want Francona to land on his feet, but I don't think he's going to get a job offer from him. And I'm told that they had issues with him long before September, and you're exactly right. They were sort of burnout issues that he wasn't approaching the job anymore the way he did when everything was fresh and new. And, you know, I think that's something all of them, you know, are going to have to sort of face the second time around as they try to recreate what they did in Boston, that they had, you know, in Boston, everything was fresh and new, and the challenge was great, and these guys were younger. They didn't have families. They could be at the office 24/7. You know, things are a little bit different this time, but I don't see Francona in the mix. I think they're just sort of playing nice with him. You know, I think if they were to throw up their hands and say, no, this, you know, start talking about all the problems with Francona, it would make it much harder for him to get a job somewhere else.
Do you have somebody in mind, Phil, that you think might be a sleeper that they actually might be seriously interested in?
Well, I mean, my guy, and the more I kick tires on it, the less the car starts rolling, is Joe Madden in Tampa. For one of, I mean, I don't think there's going to be a time like this again. You know, there's the Cubs job, there's the Cardinals job, there's the Red Sox job, all open at the same time. Three great jobs, and a guy like Joe Madden, who has only 1 year left on his contract in Tampa, if he's going to look to move at the end of that year, I would think he'd be trying to get out of that contract early so he could move now. But I'm told that he's probably going to sign an extension there, and nothing's going on. But he's my keep an eye on guy.
I would love that. I would like that. That'd
be good. Now, speaking of guys moving teams, you sound kind of skeptical, Phil, about the White Sox being able to keep Burley at this point.
Well, I don't know how you couldn't be skeptical when you see the demand that there is for him, the interest in him from other teams. You know, some people think he might be, you know, he's almost on the same level with C.J. Wilson of Texas as the most attractive free agent arm on the market now. And every team in baseball, it seems like, is looking for pitching. The White Sox were very... the White Sox seem to look at him as being at the end of the line. And, you know, this is a guy that, maybe we could give him a 2-year contract, but, you know, his fastball's down, blah, blah. I think other teams are looking at him like, hey, this is a guy that you get 200 plus innings every year. He fields his position great. He's knows how to pitch with a mid 80s fastball. And I almost think the White Sox familiarity with him hurts them, and that hurts their chances to sign him, because I think other teams are taking a fresh look at him and liking all of the positives he brings that have sort of become secondhand in Chicago. And yeah, I think the window probably has passed, although, you know, we've seen it twice with Paul Konerko where they let him get on the market and kept him.
That's what I'm hoping happens with this, where, you know, they let him see what the market is, and then he comes back and says, well, what can you give me? And if it's not good enough, he leaves. But if they give him a good offer close, he stays. That's what I'm hoping, but I don't know. It doesn't look good right now.
You know, the one thing with that is they with Konerko, both times he got really big contracts, bigger than they would have thought. And with Burley, I mean, they don't really want to go more than 3 years with a pitcher. A lot of people think Burley's going to get a 4-year offer out there from somebody. I would hope they would do 3 years guaranteed with Burley, because, you know, to me, he's the core of the team. You know, certainly the pitching is built around him. And although I was doing this in my head yesterday, really the first time I've done it, oddly enough, was trying to construct a White Sox pitching staff without Burley. You know, there's also floating around rumors that they're shopping Danks and Floyd. Now, I don't see any way you could take two guys out of that mix, Burley and one of those others, and possibly be okay, unless you made one or two great moves to acquire pitchers. You know, right now, if you lost Burley and didn't trade the other guys, you know, Danks could raise his game. Floyd could be a number two. You're really counting on Chris Sale to be good, but I think Chris Sale is going to be good. So that's not like a crazy thought to count on. And then, you know, your hope, you get the first half of the year, Phil Humber in the mix. And then you're really only looking for one starter from your farm system, or from a low level free agent type signing for your fifth starter. So,
or trading maybe Quentin for a pitcher.
Well,
that to me seems like a possibility.
You know, you need two outfielders, though. That's the thing people don't really talk about trading Quentin. I mean, you could move Vichiedo into right field, but now you got an opening in left. I mean, I think there's probably a better chance they bring back Juan Pierre than Burley, for instance. But I would upgrade in left field, too. So
if you could, but if you want to cheap it, I'll tell you, I'm a Lillibridge fan.
And Diazza, too.
Diazza, that's right.
I think Diazza has value as a platoon guy with Rios in center.
Yeah.
But here's what I – here's if in my world of fantasy general manager, if I were the White Sox, I would try to use my Cuban advantage to go get Yonis Cespedes, the Cuban center fielder who's going to hit the free agent market – in a couple of weeks. He's not yet. He's in the Dominican Republic. He's done workouts for teams. He's not yet on the market. I know the Cubs have some interest in him. He's probably going to sign, just pulling numbers out of the air. $30 million, $40 million for 4 years. I think he's a really good player.
Is he the guy that's kind of built like Vicieto, a right-handed power hitter?
He is cut. I watched this crazy video going around, that he and his agent is Adam Katz, who represented Sammy Sosa. Mm-hmm. And they sent this video to all the clubs, and it's sort of got wider distribution than they meant. And I was watching it yesterday, and there's parts of it. He's a workout fiend, and he's got a cut upper body. You know, his reported age is 26, and you always have to be dubious of those Cuban ages. But watching this workout video, he is a guy in his prime, he's a big power hitter. He set the Cuban Serie Nacional home run record last year, and he runs well. He looks to be a solid outfielder. I remember seeing him in the World Baseball Classic. I watch that Team Cuba whenever I get a chance. So I'm vaguely, I have a passing familiarity with him before seeing the video. And if you could sign him and all of a sudden now you've got an outfield where you've got Cespedes, Rios, Vicieto with Diazza and Lillibridge to sort of fill in. Now I think you got something, but I don't know that you could go with either Diazza or Lillibridge as a regular. Maybe you could, but one thing that would really hurt the Sox last year were the power numbers, the home run numbers. And, if you were able to sign Cespedes, it would make it a ton easier to trade Quentin. I don't know how you can trade Quentin when you're already worried about your power numbers.
That's true. Although Lillibridge, actually, for his at-bats, surprisingly hit with very good power. Now, that was the one guy who seemed like he really took advantage of hitting in Sox Park. Unlike Adam Dunn, who you thought would, Lillibridge hit at bat, I don't know what it ended up, but he had a very good slugging percentage. And you don't know if he could do it every day. For some reason, Ozzy had him pegged as a guy who can't. Where, how do you know, Ozzy? You never had him do it. Let him play every day and prove that he can't do it. Because he can sure play defense. I don't think there's any doubt with that. But, I see your point. You'd want to have another proven guy if you could. I just don't know. I don't know about that. Now, as far as the Cubs, couldn't you see them going after Yu Darvish, that Japanese pitcher?
Yeah, you could.
They really need a starter.
Yeah, I do think they're going to rebuild the pitching first, but they need run producers too. With Aramis Ramirez leaving, no real.
Well, it looks like we lost Phil. You better switch to the telephone there, Phil. Dave, if you haven't seen it, try to go to YouTube and watch a video of Yu Darvish. He's a Japanese pitcher. Yeah. I think he's 25. It's Y-U is his first name, Darvish. He's really got some very good stuff. He's got he throws mid to high 90s fastball, but it looked like he really had a good breaking pitch. So that seems like a type of guy I could see Theo and the boys going after.
And that's
that wouldn't,
that's where I think they'll be different than it seems like Henry never thought outside the box that much. They didn't have the scouting to do that. I know they had Steve Wilson, the old Cub pitcher. He was like their Pacific Rim guy and stuff. But they never, the Sox to me always did more like Cuban stuff and some of the Japanese stuff. So I think these guys might be more equipped to bring more of an international vibe to the Cubs, which I would like that. And that would get me excited if they got it. You know, we talked about before, I'm a little skeptical about the whole Japanese thing. Some of these Japanese pitchers haven't worked out, but he's a little different. He's a little outside the mold of,
He's definitely a stuff type pitcher. He's not a finesse pitcher.
Right.
Where it seems like a lot of the Japanese pitchers have been more finesse, but this guy, from what I've seen of him, it's definitely something to check out on YouTube where you can really see his video. I think now Phil was going to have to leave at the 30-minute mark anyway, and since he had sound problems, I think he's probably just going to go. He had another thing he had to do at 8:30. So have a good one, Phil, if you can still hear us. But Phil will be back with us next week. And then let's see. Dave, did you happen to see the little blurb? I think it was actually in the Daily Herald. But a Cub fan was driving on I-74. And I guess there was a traffic jam, and he looked over the side. There was a pile of stuff, including a Cardinals hat laying there. So I guess somebody got out of the car and picked it up. It turned out, if this story is true, that the Cardinals hat was signed by virtually the whole Cardinals team this year and then had somebody else on it. They took the hat to a card shop. And apparently this is legit on how he found it, because he does want to return it to the guy who owned it. Isn't that a weird story?
I see that story.
Yeah. You're stuck in a traffic jam. You look over, there's a Cardinals hat. You're a Cub fan. You're like, I don't want this thing.
Do you get many hats signed? How does the whole team sign a hat? I guess.
Yeah, you see that. You know, especially when it's a championship team, you'll see them sign jerseys, balls. Yeah. Not so much hats, but some guys like to collect the hats and bats. A lot of bat stuff signed. So
I've got one hat signed by Ozzie Timmons. Remember him? He was like a fringe outfielder for the Cubs. And it's signed under the bill, you know. I mean, I think it might have been his game hat. I think I bought it at a one of those, like, warehouse sales. Was it Indianapolis Indians game years ago? And, you know, how they had – Cubs used to do that. They had an end-of-the-year thing, and I think they were selling those things. It was, like, player-used apparel and stuff. So I think Ozzie Timmons actually wore that cap.
Is it a Cubs hat or is it a minor league?
Indianapolis Indians.
There you go.
Logo and stuff, yeah.
That's a good collectible.
I used to wear it.
Yeah, right. That's what's good about that one. You don't have to feel bad about wearing it.
Yeah, right.
Remember when David Wells, didn't he wear a Babe Ruth hat?
Yeah. And then he got in trouble for it, right?
I think he did, because he wasn't wearing official current Yankees, you know, headgear or whatever.
Well, yeah, and Selig, I think Selig told him not to do it, which I think, you know, again, there's nothing wrong with that, right? Wear that during the game. It's kind of fun.
As long as it's a Yankees hat, you know, if it was a Cubs hat, I don't see anything wrong with that either. You know, come on, have a little, there's not a lot of sense of humor in the corporate people running the different sports leagues, though. You can see that.
Yeah, here's I have a source, and Phil would be able to address this when he's back with us, is that I think this is going to play out. Selig retires, right? He's 76. He's going to retire, like, next year?
Supposedly, I think the end of next year's contract's done.
So McPhail's out. McPhail's going to be the next baseball commissioner, Andy McPhail.
I'm sure there would be a push for that. You know, he's right in there with all those guys for a long time. That makes sense.
Line is with his father and stuff, yeah.
I wouldn't want it, but... I was never a big fan of McPhail, but what would you think about that?
Yeah, I wasn't a big fan of him as a GM, but he might have some different things to do. You know, he might be a little more. I don't think Selig is. I'm not a big Selig guy. You know, I'm not a real fan of the DH in separate leagues. I think it should be more consistent and stuff. Interleague play, you know, he trumps that up. I think there's too much of it. Like Cubs Sox, I like to see it once a year. I like to see, like, 3 games a year and stuff. I like to see more of the old rivalries, like, season ticket holder, like, just more of the old National League teams come through as opposed to all these American League teams.
I think you're right. I think they've done too much with the interleague. I think they've gone too far with it. I like it. I like the Sox and Cubs playing every year for sure in games that count. But I think they've gone too far with it myself.
I think the All-Star game thing needs to be fixed a little bit, you know, as far as, like we were talking, bringing people back into the game or making it for the home field is just, I'm not comfortable with that as was illustrated this year with St. Louis getting home field advantage as a wild card team. So, you know, maybe McPhail would tweak some of those things. I don't know. He's a traditionalist, but it'd be interesting. Selig's been in a long, long time.
Yeah. Now, here's one for you, Dave. This Sports Card Market Report did an article on the top catchers of all time. And this got me thinking, number nine, they had Fisk, who has a statue at Sox Park, even though a great part of his career, and many people think of him as a Red Sox. Number eight was Gabby Hartnett. And reading up on him, he was even better than I thought with it. Thought he was. Obviously, Hall of Fame catcher, but I didn't even realize this, that he was on 4 Cubs teams that made it to World Series. Obviously, they didn't win any because he played mainly in the 30s. He hit the homer in the Gloman. He was MVP one year. He had in a year that he wasn't MVP in 1930, he had 339 with 37 homers and 122 RBIs. He was their player manager for a while. Why don't the Cubs have a statue of somebody like that outside Wrigley? Do they think that, you know, it just started in 1960 baseball? You know, maybe get a Tinker Evers chance, like triple statue, the three of them together, a Gabby Hartnett, get a little of the older history in there. Guys that actually were in World Series. Right now they've got an announcer and a bunch of, you know, great players, but none of them have made a World Series.
You know, like it would hack Wilson in front of the Cubby Bear.
Yeah, now there you go. The Cubby Bear should just pay for that one.
Yeah,
right. Right. Well, it's time for a short break.
One quick thing. Was Ted Simmons on that list?
Was who?
Ted Simmons on that list.
Ted Simmons, I don't think he was in the top 10, but let's see. 11 was Posada, 12 Ernie Lombardi.
I think Ted Simmons is one of the most underrated players of our generation. I really do.
Yeah, they actually had the top 12 catchers of all time. It seems like in this article they did say something about him, though. Let me just real quick see if I can see it. They talked about Elston Howard. Here. It says, debates will rage on about who ranks at the top of the list. I'm a firm believer. For example, how do you begin to compare Deacon White to Lance Paris or Ray Shock to Ted Simmons?
You know
what I mean? So he does at least talk about him as one of the top guys.
Yep.
Who would you think they have as number one and two?
Bench up there?
Bench is one.
Yeah.
Yeah. Number two?
I don't know. Tell me.
Yogi Berra.
Yogi Berra, that's right, yeah.
You know, one time I had Whitey Ford was on our show a couple of times when on ESPN, and they had a ranking in some magazine of all-time catchers, and I think they had Berra 6th or 7th, and I brought that up in ranking of catchers, and man, did he defend Yogi Berra as being great. He's like, you know, because people remember him for a lot of the goofy things he said, the kind of goofy way he looked, but he won three MVPs.
Right.
I think he's won more World Series rings than anybody. A lot of people overlook just how great he actually was as a player and as a clutch hitter. Excellent.
He caught so many games.
Yeah.
A lot of those guys, but think how many games he caught. Probably like 158 a year or something, you know what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely. So that was kind of an interesting thing, but I mean, to me, that's something the Cubs should look at. Get a couple statues out there of guys who actually played in the World Series. Maybe that would help the karma a little bit.
Yeah, that's a bad idea.
Time for a short break now. Hang in there, everybody. We'll come back with Bucks in the Belfry and with lots more talk. So hang in there, everybody.
The solid sound of wood hitting a leather ball. That's the way baseball started, and that's how Hoosier Bat Company believes the game should be played. They've been providing bats to minor and major leaguers for 20 years. They offer ash bats, birch bats, and their patented Wood Force 2000, a bat with hickory in the sweet spot for great hits. View their products online at HoosierBat.com and see why players at every level have come to appreciate their quality and customer service. You can also visit them at 4511 Evans Avenue in Valparaiso, Indiana, or call 1-800-228-3787.
Rosati's of Naperville and Carroll Stream is the place for great pizza and more. They use only the finest ingredients. That's why Rosati's mouthwatering menu can't be beat. Rosati's delivers for lunch daily. In Naperville, call 630-305-3500. In Carroll Stream, 630-653-9009. That's Rosati's of Naperville and Carroll Stream.
Southside Cards and Collectibles is your one-stop shop for premier cards and collectibles. No matter what your hobby, baseball, football, basketball, hockey, NASCAR, gaming, or more, Southside Cards carries all the new packs and boxes from Upper Deck, Topps, Panini, and Press Pass. You'll also find memorabilia and supplies. Come in today and see for yourself. Southside Cards is open every day but Monday. They're located at 11325 West 143rd Street, Orland Park, Illinois. Call 708-873-5088 or visit them online at southsidecards.com. Southside Cards and Collectibles, your one-stop shop for premier cards and collectibles. Call 708-873-5088 or online at southsidecards.com.
You've discovered TalkZone.com.
TalkZone.com,
the best in internet talk radio.
Time for another edition of Bucks in the Belfry. SCP Auctions has a very cool item going in a current auction. This actually might be the bat that Lou Gehrig used to hit the last home run he ever hit in his life, which was in a preseason game, a spring training game. The bat comes from the family of actor Kurt Russell. It was consigned from Bing Russell. I believe that's Kurt Russell's father, was a clubhouse boy for the Yankees for 8 years, during the 30s and into the 40s. And I guess, when Gehrig in 1939 in a spring training game hit two homers, and after his second homer, found the bat had a crack at the handle, and Gehrig gave it to Bing Russell. And then Gehrig started the 1939 season. I guess even during spring training there, everybody on the team could see that, you know, his health was failing badly, but they didn't know what was going on with him. But he didn't hit a home run during that 1939 regular season. So this bat is being auctioned. And right now it's at $107,181. Bidding ends in 10 days at SCP Auctions. That's cool when you not only have a proven game-used item from a big name like that, But when there's a little story behind it, another story with it, apparently Bing Russell had this bat sitting for years in just one of those, like a little umbrella case in his house, and would bring it out and show people, you know, when they came over. Yeah, this was Lou Gehrig's bat, the last bat he ever hit a home run with, just sitting there, you know, as a, like it was another, just somebody's wiffle ball bat or something. But then
I didn't know it was that high. I guess I'll have to go up my bid after we hang up.
Yeah, you have to go up to, I think that could go 200,000 to 300,000 or even more. You never know on an item like that. Just the whole story behind it and everything, it's pretty cool. Here's something that's a little more affordable for you, Dave. I don't think you're really a football fan, but on the T Crown Tom eBay seller ID, you can get to all my items at tcrowntom.com. The rookie quarterbacks are really hot in the NFL this year. Cam Newton's getting all the publicity, but I have a exquisite rookie card numbered to 25 of Andy Dalton. He's the rookie quarterback for the Bengals. Now, the Bengals actually have a chance to make the playoffs. They're 6-2. Cam Newton has no chance to make the playoffs. One thing Cam Newton does have is a chance to break Dan Marino's single season passing record. Can you imagine if a rookie did that? I don't think he's going to, or even if he does, Breeze and Brady are ahead of Cam Newton in yardage, but still, it's a pretty amazing year that Cam Newton's had. But as far as quarterback ratings go, Newton's around 87 and Andy Dalton's at like 85. So Andy Dalton's having an excellent year as a rookie quarterback in his own regard. And his cards aren't selling anywhere near as high as Cam Newton's, so might not be a bad pickup for people. Then also on the T Crown Tom eBay seller ID, I have a Peyton Manning autographed card. Now here's an interesting question. Peyton Manning, let's say he's healthy, that he even comes back and plays a game at the end of this year, or just proves himself that he's going to come back and play and he's 100% healthy. And let's say the Colts get the first pick in the draft. Do you trade the draft pick because you have Manning? Do you draft Luck, the Stanford quarterback that many experts are calling the best quarterback they've seen come out of college? Or do you trade Manning and just say, we're going to rebuild anyway. You get as many players as you can for Manning and just go with the rookie quarterback and do a complete rebuild. If it's me, I think I'm trading Manning. I look at, similarly, if you go back in history, when the Dallas Cowboys, when Jerry Jones first took over and Jimmy Johnson was coaching them, and they had, they traded Herschel Walker to the Vikings, got a lot, bunch of young talent for him. And, I think the Colts are going to have to retool. That's what I would do. What would you do in a situation like that?
How old is Manning?
Was drafted in 98, I think, so he's probably 34, maybe.
Really? He's that old, huh?
He's getting up there. I don't know exactly, but I'm going to say he's right about 34.
So you think you'd get a lot for him? And how bad? It's a neck thing, right?
I mean, it's a neck thing, so he has to be able to prove himself as healthy. But if, you know, and I'm sure if you're trading him to another team, they're going to want to do a complete physical checkup, and that would be based on that, you know, what you'd get. Producer Dave Olson just put up Manning is actually 35. So
yeah,
to me, I'm not.
I'd take Luck, I
would go with Luck if I'm them for sure. And even if you keep Manning, if you can't trade, I think you'd be able to trade him. I mean, for something pretty good, I would think at least a couple of draft. Look what they got for Carson Palmer, for crying out loud. I mean, he's younger, but they got a first and a second for Carson Palmer. Jeez, you'd think you'd be able to get more than that for Manning. So that's what I would do. But meanwhile, Manning's a for sure Hall of Famer, and his autographed cards are still very popular. And then we go to another football player, Matt Forte. I have a rookie autographed jersey card of Matt Forte on the T Crown Tom eBay seller ID. Now, Matt Forte really should just be quiet about getting a new contract. I think he fumbled twice in this last game. Don't jinx yourself, Matt. You know, just play the game, get your money. They did give him an offer that was a reasonable offer before the year. I think the Bears could have come back with a better offer. They seem to be doing their typical tightwad type thing with them. But meanwhile, he should just be quiet about it and play, because that almost lost the game for him. But the Bears are right in the thick of things now in the playoff chase. They played Detroit this week. That's actually turned into a really big game at Chicago. Do you follow the Bears much, Dave?
I watched them on TV.
Yeah.
I watched a little bit the other night. Yeah.
So they've actually gotten themselves back into the playoff chase by beating two teams that they would have been battling for the wild card with, and beating Tampa Bay and beating the Eagles Monday. That was huge back-to-back wins for them. Even if they had lost one of those.
It seems like their offensive line straightened out a little bit.
Soon as they benched Omeyal, it's like they had a whole different offensive line. What a difference that made. It's incredible how much better they've blocked since they benched that guy. He was just horrendous. He was screwing it all up. Plus, they've kept more blockers in. They're doing some quicker passes. They're running more. But meanwhile, they did bench him, too. He was horrible. Absolutely one of the worst starting offensive linemen, especially in pass blocking, I've ever seen. Now, the last item I've got on the T-Crown Tom that we're talking about today, that Yu Darvish, the pitcher from Japan that we were talking about earlier, he's going to get some big money from some team, and I wouldn't be surprised if the Cubs are all over that one. They know they need a couple of starting pitchers. They need a lot, but a younger starting pitcher, I think he's 25 years old, with good stuff. I could see them going after him. I've got from a couple of years ago, there was a World Baseball Classic, a blue refractor card where they had a piece of his World Classic jersey on the card, and there's not a lot of his stuff out there, so this card is actually getting a lot of looks, and his stuff's getting pretty hot. A lot of collectors know that he'll be coming out to a Major League Baseball team this year, it looks like. They have to do that whole bidding thing. I never quite understand exactly how that works. We'll have to get Phil to explain that next week. Okay, so that's it for the Bucks and the Belfry this week. But one other thing, Panini has sent us some more boxes to give away. So we're going to do a drawing on November 30th. We'll be giving away a box of Panini Absolute Football, which is a really good football product. Good chance for a lot of the high-priced rookie quarterbacks in there, autographed and patch cards of them, and also a box of Score Hockey. If you send me a question about the value of an item, you get in the drawing, and we'll do the drawing the last week of each month. They've given me 3 months' worth of prizes to give away, so send me a question to Tom at tcrowntom.com, or you can call in during the show at 888-463-6748, either with a question about the value of an item, or if you just want to talk about a neat item that you have. If we use it on the show, you'll get in the drawing. And I did get an email about an item. One of our listeners has a triple jersey card, Lou Gehrig, Babe Ruth, and Yogi Berra. This is from 2001, and it's actually what is another advantage to this card. It's numbered to 100, but it's Lou Gehrig's jersey number 4 of 100, which a lot of guys like to get that. Usually the number ones when an item's serial numbered, or if they can get the guy's jersey number, that usually helps the value of it. I saw another item like this where they were asking $349 for it on eBay, and that's what they were asking. None have sold. I think this card sells, especially with the Gehrig number, somewhere in the $300 to $500 range if you put that up for sale. Neat card. Very cool. Good card to hang on to long term, too, because there's not a ton of those jerseys still out there. Okay, so don't forget, you get that question in and get in the drawing for the Panini Absolute Football Box and the Score Hockey Box. Now, Dave, I was looking at one of your articles in the Sun-Times, and you wrote about a band, I think it was called White Mystery, where a brother and a sister with the last name of White have their own little band going. You want to tell a little bit about them?
They're a pretty hot group in Chicago. They play kind of a fuzzy, grungy, guitar-driven. I mean, it's a lot of sound for two people. They are brother and sister Alex White and Francis Scott Key White, you know, claims to be a distant cousin of the Star Spangled Banner guy and stuff.
Alex is actually the girl.
Alex is the girl. Both have this flaming red hair, just really in your face, but kind of goes back to the 60s. I think I cited the Electric Prunes, and there was a song they did called Too Much to Dream Of. That just really fuzz-driven guitar, rock and roll and stuff, and they're playing all over Chicago. I think last weekend when I did my story, they were at the Cubby Bear. I think they've got a show coming out to Hideout and stuff, but they're really, really a fun group. They really are.
I listened to cuts from a few of their songs, and I really liked her voice. You know, her voice reminded me a little bit of Janis Joplin.
That's a good call. She said she gets that a lot, actually.
Does she? That's what I thought of. His voice, to me, he shouldn't sing. I did not like his vocals on there at all. Did you get that feeling, too, or were you kind of into him?
No, I agree. I like her vocals a lot. What I like about them is an immediacy. You know, their records, they do them really quick. They've got two records out. They do them on first and second takes and stuff. I'm not a real fan of overproduced stuff, too much polished stuff. I think rock and roll is about immediacy and being in the moment and not glossing over things a lot and stuff. And there's just an acute, almost like an acute rawness to their sound. It's just, you know, they are. They're very, very good. I'm sure big things would be happening to them. They opened, I think, for Guster or Weezer, something at the Congress Theater, so they're getting some nice opening slots in bigger venues and stuff. And I know she said they're going to be touring a lot in 2012, so they are something to keep an eye on.
I think she has a big-time voice.
Yeah.
I think, to me, if they added somebody else in the band, a secondary vocalist, kept him in playing and whatever he does, but she's got a big-time voice.
Yeah.
Yeah, I could see them making it big. White Mystery, so look for them in the Chicago area. Now, what's your take on Penn State and Joe Paterno, Dave?
Wow. I'm almost speechless. I think it's the biggest sports story of the year. I really, really do. I follow college football. You know, we lived in Columbus for a little while when I was a kid, so it came up, I was kind of a Woody Hayes guy. I posted a thing the other day, this whole Woody Hayes stuff doesn't seem so bad now. I'm just floored. I've talked with friends about when Tressel went through all that stuff and the arrogance and just the fact that these people, they have Big Ten, big college programs, have such a budget, and they pay these coaches $5-6 million a year, and it's really time to do a gut check. And I think this is so indicative of that. And for Paterno, it starts at the top. And if he really was informed of this in 2002, and if all he did was go to Superior and talk about it, why didn't anyone call the cops? How could they? The arrogance and the fact that these guys think they're bulletproof and they can march to their own drummer. I mean,
yeah,
this is just, it's got to stop. It really.
How could you let that guy hang around till 2009 or whenever if you're Paterno
and you know
what he did? No matter who reports what, how can you let him hang around that long?
I know, and people are putting their men and women, they're young men and women, entrust these people. You send a kid away to school and you trust they're going to be taken care of and they're going to be watched over and stuff. And it's just, I don't know what the status is. I guess I feel sorry for him. He's 84 years old, but he's still accountable. And I suppose they'll let him coach. This is their last home game. It's senior day this Saturday and stuff, but he's got to be a goner after that.
I think it's pretty sure he's gone at the end of the season. I don't know whether he's going to coach the rest of this season or not. I don't know. It's too bad from the standpoint that's how he has to end his career, because he did seem like he was a better guy than some of these big-time college coaches that are just disgustingly arrogant. But how do you let, you know, is he getting senile? How do you let that... This is 9 years ago or whatever. I mean, how do you let that go?
Yeah, and the athletic director and stuff. I mean, it's a way deeper story than sports. It's a society story, and it's about accountability and maybe accountability and just like, you know, just stand up and take a stand. And it's just I'm just mesmerized by this story. I really am.
Kind of the old boy network where he's one of their buddies or whatever, so you let him get away with that? I mean,
yeah.
Come on.
Yeah, I know.
That's not some minor thing where, you know,
And talking about, you know, I was driving back from seeing Lucinda Williams in Palatine last night, and I heard a soundbite with Matt Millen. I guess maybe you saw this. I think it came off of ESPN yesterday.
I did see some of that.
He said he broke down and stuff, and, you know... All the facts maybe aren't in, but where there's smoke, there's fire, and it's just, I mean, he's got 40 counts of him. Sandusky has 40 counts on him and stuff. It's a sick, sick story, and it's just really such a stain on college sports. And I don't know how you fix the whole college sports system. And, you know, it's such a big corporate money-making system, and these guys are just, they're just isolated from reality. I was saying that about Tressel, too. Tressel, you know, was so arrogant, just so, like, I think he thought he was above the rules, and it's awful. It's awful.
It really is. Yeah, it'll be interesting to see what happens with it. It'll be interesting to see this Saturday what goes on if he coaches. I don't think I'd let him coach this game. I don't care how long he's been there. I'm in charge of that, I mean, you could... look at forfeiting the game, but I don't think that's going to happen.
I've heard somebody saying they should just cancel the rest of their season. I mean,
but at the very least, I don't see how you can let him coach.
Yeah.
It's a sad end to a, you know, such a long career. And like I say, there's other guys that you would expect that of, not necessarily a him, but I've heard good things about him, so from that standpoint, it's too bad. But
he's been with Penn State 62 years.
Isn't that unbelievable?
Yeah. But then do you get complacent? Do you get, you know? I mean, of course, probably. You know, I mean, what was we're talking about Epstein? I mean, and that's been in the papers, and we've been talking about it on the show about, like, well, after 10 years, you got to move on and stuff. So imagine after 62 years, this is how, like. How numb you get to what's around you and stuff.
Yeah. Well, and I heard him he was talking, you know, he's got all these grandchildren and stuff. Okay, would you want your grandchildren going and playing for a school that had this guy there?
Yeah.
I mean, come on, you have to look at it that way.
It's insane to me. I mean, so if I was in that position, someone came and told me that, I'd call the cops. It's like a no-brainer.
Yeah. I don't think you wouldn't even really, I don't care who it is.
Yeah.
You know, you'd have to say, hey, you got to get help, man. You know?
Right.
Yeah. It's really kind of, it's mind boggling.
Yeah.
So.
Huge story.
Well, one other thing, we're giving away these boxes to completely change the subject to a little more lighthearted thing here. Each week, now, if you send in a comment about an item that you have or a question about the value of an item, we're giving away from Panini a prize at the end of each month, and anybody who I use in the question on our show, they get in the drawing. November 30th, we'll be giving away a box of Panini Absolute Football and a box of Score Hockey. I had a question from a listener who has a George Sisler game used bat, and these can run the gamut if they're early in the career from a historical time or whatever. Some of them aren't that expensive, but he really, more than anything, he wanted to know, how can you even tell if a bat is a real game-used bat or if it's just a like a store model bat? So really, one of these shows, I've got to get Dave Bushing on. He is the bat expert in the country, and he can do some more, you know, really fill in. I think he gets a lot of the records from the bat companies, actually, where he can check it out. But what I did do is I checked out an article by professional sport card authenticators, PSA President Joe Orlando, that he wrote an article about game used bats. And some of the questions about it, at this point, there, according to his article, there's no doubt as to whether you can actually, you know, it's real. Distinct labeling, records, and wood quality help separate real gamers from all other bats. It's, besides bat labeling on the barrel, knob labeling and wood grain can also help determine what era a bat was from. They have shipping records on some of these bats. Like, he owned a Ted Williams bat that could be pinpointed to 1954 because the shipping records showed that he only ordered that model length and weight in the spring of 54 and never ordered it again after that. And then how do you know that whether they used it? And you don't know for sure. And sometimes some bats come with a letter from the player or the player's agent stating the bat was used by the player. That's the best thing. But then you look for marks on the bat from the balls hitting it or from them being in the bat rack, whatever. An unused vintage game bat can have tremendous value. So it's there's value either way, if you, as long as you prove that it was meant to be a game bat. Look for evidence of bat rack marks, seam or lace marks, heavy ball marks, or other distinguishing marks. And then as far as the condition of a bat, it's not like cards. Even cracks in a bat can be okay if the bat still looks good. You don't necessarily want a mint bat because it wouldn't have any marks at all on it, and that would mean it probably really wasn't even used in a game. So it's kind of a different thing collecting game-used bats, but they're not a ton out there, especially in the old days. Some of those guys that use a bat, you know, for years, that they really made them like clubs. So there's some big time value to some of these bats, and that all goes into that Lou Gehrig game used bat that's up for auction in SCP. Kind of neat. I remember one time I was at a White Sox game in the 70s, and Ed Herman gave us his cracked bat.
Well, I'm curious, you know, we talked last week about Rick Woodfield in Alabama. When I bought Mr. Bostock, Lama Bostock's father, when I brought him to the ballpark and stuff, then we took him back to his house, and he spent time in his basement. He would hand carve, and he handmade baseball bats. So I bought one from him. It was like $200.
Yeah, that's cool.
It was really, really nice. It was really, really sweet.
A Lyman Bostock game used bat would probably have some very good value. I wonder if he has any of his son's bats still.
Yeah, but it was a piece of folk art that this man actually made. It was really neat.
Yeah, that's cool. Well, we're at the end of another show. Phil Rogers had to leave early this week, but he'll be back next week for the full show. I'm Tom Morgan with Phil Rogers of the Tribune, Dave Hoekstra of the Sun-Times, and our producer Dave Olson. We're on live every Wednesday from 8 to 9 a.m. Central Time, and you can hear rebroadcast 24/7 at TalkZone.com. So thanks for listening, everybody, and have a great week.